and welcome to Talk Star Wars, episode 146, Uganda's 119th most popular TV and film podcast. We climb the ranks week by week. I'm Rob.
I'm Brad.
Hello, mate.
You all right? How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am massive in Uganda.
Yes, indeed. We are up there with the best of them. I don't know. Yeah. I haven't looked at the chart to see who's above us, but I can only assume they are playing their craft as best they possibly can.
Yeah,
and fearing for their heels, because ultimately we're coming.
I'd be intrigued to know how many of those 118 are Star Wars podcasts.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it? Because we could end up becoming inadvertently Uganda's number one Star Wars podcast.
It's conceivable.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, we want to be number one in every country. That would be wonderful. But at the same time, we're realistic to the fact that, you know, there are various things in our way.
Yeah.
Are the Star Wars
I don't know. I mean, obviously, some countries have a reputation for being really into certain things. Like, I think it was South Korea was really big on StarCraft and find a foothold there. And obviously, there's a joke about David Hasselhoff being absolutely massive in Germany. I don't know how true that is.
Oh, no, as far as I understand it, it's pretty true.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, is there something which is massively popular in Uganda? Like, has V managed to get a foothold in the popular culture?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, it might be that they're the biggest consumers of Battlestar Galactica worldwide. I really couldn't say.
I didn't know if it was. If Uganda did have a track record, have a reputation for being
big
really
on particular
into
pop culture.
Yeah, massive Uncharted fans or something.
I mean, possibly.
Yeah, I was just interested.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know. If we have any Ugandan listeners, then talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com or the usual social media channels, which will be recapped at the end of the show, let us know. You know, what's big in Uganda, apart from, evidently, Talk Star Wars.
Talk Star Wars. Yeah, I mean, you've embraced us, but you want to embrace your culture similarly, so please.
Exactly.
Ugandan listeners, let us know what's shaking in Uganda.
Exactly, indeed. I'm going to assume that our first person writing in is not from Uganda, although I may be wrong. You know, my understanding is that I'm not, but stranger things have happened. They're up to series like 4 now, I think.
I think they're filming 4, yeah.
Yeah. So our first message, and actually a series of messages this week from Vesuvi.
Okay.
So
everyone's favourite Vesuvi.
Yes, indeed. Number one. With a, you know, there's not really much in the, it's a pretty niche market, I think. And she definitely seems to have cornered it.
So have you edited these all into one email in the show notes?
I have, yeah. So there's one message which is comprised of about 5 emails this week. She's been prolific and getting in touch. And I cannot thank her enough, of course. So Vesuvi begins, I just finished watching The Platform Classic. This is one of the Resistance Roundups. And this one's quite lengthy, actually, considering compared to the others. They seem to be getting lengthier, which is weird because you'd think as the season progressed,
she's very clever.
Indeed, you know, if there's one thing we know about Vesuvi, she's resourceful and wily.
Mm-hmm.
So Vesuvi begins, I just finished watching the Phantom Classic. The setup has Yiga's crew all excited about a big race. Captain Dozer wants to meet with Yiga to discuss something with him. Kaz begs Yiga if the crew can attend the meeting. So Tam, Niku, and BB-8, along with Kaz, join them. Dozer explains that the race should pump some revenue into the Colossus. And, to make it as big a spectacle as possible, he wants Yiga to be among the participants. Yiga proclaims that his racing days are far behind him. Dozer expected this response, but he then nudges on that surely Yiga wouldn't be able to resist competing with a celebrity, Marcus Speedstar, who dramatically appears. Tam and Niku are impressed, but Yiga reveals that he knows Marcus very well. There is clear tension on Yiga's part. The rest I should probably leave for when you see the episode yourselves. I will add, though, that we'll meet a new species, that hasn't been added to Wikipedia or the Star Wars databank as yet. It's the Krakek, if I'm spelling it correctly. The character is named Oplok. And one final tease. We'll get to see some members of the Guavian Death Gang for the first time on screen since The Force Awakens. Nice.
Nice.
So there's some Wikipedia links, as always. So we have Tam Rivora, Niku Vozo, Emmanuel Dozer, Marcus Speedstar, and the Guavian Death Gang.
I hate that name.
You keep making a noise. Yeah.
I hate that name. It's awful. Okay.
It might be a nickname.
I hope so. It seems quite jarringly pop culture compared. I mean, you've got Tam Rivora and Niku Vozo, who are Star Wars sounding names of Marcus Speedstar.
Yeah.
Who sounds like he's guesting from another cartoon.
Yeah. Speed Racer, perhaps.
Or Jimmy Neutron or Ben Tennyson, you know.
Yeah, indeed. So I'm hoping it's a nickname, because otherwise it would be as on the nose as calling it, you know, Luke as your father, or, you know, Anakin, he'll be evil.
Yeah, or Han.
Oh.
So, right.
Yeah, never mind. They've ruined that for us.
Yeah.
Vesuvi went on to include Wikipedia entries for the Krachek or Krakek.
Mm-hmm.
Ezreal Sar Nikto, I think, who is obviously canon, and Oplok. And then she continues, Wikipedia still doesn't have a listing for...
Is that related to Nikto or a species already? Is that any relation to...
Maybe. I didn't really...
I will take a quick gander at Wikipedia.
Have a quick gander and let us know.
Because Nikto were in Return of the Jedi originally. They're on
Jabba's
Skiff.
Yeah, isn't it? Aren't there three? Are they species or individual characters?
Klaatu, Barada, and Nikto are three species.
Yeah, okay.
That's a broken link. Let's try that again.
It might be... I can see it's URL encoded, so I don't know if that's going to cause issues. Oh, no, it worked for me. Ezreal Sar Nikto.
I found it. And there's a Legends version
Not much there.
No. I mean, it's got a canon and a Legends section, so I'm just checking the Legends section as well.
Yeah.
No, totally unrelated by the look of it.
Okay.
Oh, no. They are a sentient subspecies of Nikto.
Oh, okay. And Oplok is one of them.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. They seem to be, you know, fleshing out the universe with aliens finally.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Easier than cartoon, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so. But that shouldn't mean that that's the only way they can do it. I'm cynical that way. Sorry. You've got. Yeah. It's not like they can't say, "Oh, we're short on budget. Give me a break." Anyway, Wikipedia still doesn't have a listing for R4-D12, but the databank has been revised to include him. There's a link to the databank. And then a follow-up email, R4-D12 got his Wikipedia page today.
Diligent, isn't she?
Really, yeah. She's literally, I don't know if she set up alerts or something when they update on Wikipedia. She's right in there.
I wonder if she's a moderator at Wikipedia.
Ooh, that might well be it. That might well be it, you know. And then... Vesuvi wrote, so that's all the Resistance stuff. Again, I'm impressed, Vesuvi, at how well you are able to tell us stuff without spoiling stuff, especially the further we get on in the season. It feels like it should be the other way around.
Ooh. Also, I meant to say to you, obviously, this will come more into the news later. Obviously, a new Star Wars cartoon was announced. In addition to that, they also launched Star Wars Kids as a separate YouTube channel.
Oh, okay.
I took a gander yesterday, and the first two episodes of Resistance are up there, but they are location locked, so we can't watch them in the UK.
Rubbish.
So obviously, there are ways and means of getting around IP addresses. Not that I'm saying you should do that, but, you know, you can do that.
We
don't endorse it. It's not legal, but, you know, there are ways and means. Not what I'm saying you should.
But,
you know,
I mean,
they're very easy and free, and, you know, if you can use Google, there are ways of doing it. Not what I'm saying you should.
Maybe you should stop saying that you're not saying you should, because people can see through you like you are a Force ghost. Anyway, Vesuvi writes a normal message. Not that the messages, the other ones were, you know, they weren't upside down or anything like that. It was just on a specific subject. This is in relation to episode 145.
So, on a scale of 1 to Lefty Windu, how normal is your message?
Yeah, I mean, this is it, ultimately. So Vesuvi writes, thanks, Rob. Thanks, Brad. Since you have both wondered about this every time the Star Wars Resistance character of Jarek Yeager has been mentioned, I'll solve the mystery. And hence you'll notice that I've been sticking to a particular pronunciation and not second-guessing myself this time around.
Yes, I did.
He pronounces his name Yeager as opposed to Jaeger. I wonder if Chuck Yeager loses sleep over the fact the show didn't opt for the way he phonates his name. Wait a minute. In regard to what... Maybe I don't read phonetic alphabet as well as I thought I would. I'm pretty sure that's right, though. Anyway, in regards to Arthur Crouch's question, not that I personally want Rey to be a clone of anyone, but I imagined a way to work that aspect into the story. So this is what I like about our listeners. They don't necessarily agree with it, but they'll see if they can, they'll think it through, which I like.
It's talk Star Wars. It's not agree Star Wars.
Yeah, I know. Perhaps
passive aggressive Star Wars.
It's all communicated by post-its.
Yeah.
Perhaps one of the secretive Imperial
constant interruption Star Wars.
Perhaps one of the secretive Imperial programs on Jakku, which included a weapons facility, an observatory, and a Kizium gas rig, but many of which are still unknown canonically, included an edict from the Emperor, which tasked some medical droids, and perhaps some Kamino and slave scientists, to create a clone of Shmi Skywalker Lars, using bits of her remains taken from her grave on Tatooine, which the Emperor, or in the case that the Emperor wasn't alive, some future dark side user, could pour Plagueis-style force energy into, therefore, theoretically creating a new Vader, or Vader-esque Chosen One, via parthenogenesis. Why did it take so long to perfect, since Rey was born a decade or more after Palpatine's demise? Maybe the clones made from cadaverous tissue are unstable, and it took them that long to coax one to viability. Coach. Now, be viable. Come on. Get in there. Get your head in the game. I'd say Daisy Ridley resembles a younger Pernilla August, more so than Alden Ehrenreich resembles a young Harrison Ford.
Oh, shots fired.
I know, right?
She's done a 180 on defending Solo, hasn't she?
I know. DVD's come out and she's just like, forget it. I'm done. Yeah. It's like, they don't defend me. About whatever. I don't know. So it could be shoehorned in if the makers choose to go down that route. Yeah, it could.
I agree, shoehorn is the operative word there.
Yeah, it's a good word. It's a good word for it. I'd like to also take this opportunity to congratulate everyone associated with Talk Star Wars for making it the 120th most popular podcast in Uganda. So we clarify TV and film. I feel confident that if we all try very earnestly, we can get to the 119th slot. Well, whatever you did, Vesuvi, it worked.
Yeah.
So we sow 2008,
you sow 2008. Yeah. We're already there.
118 is next week's target. Obviously, we'll work our way up to, at that rate, we'll work our way up to number one just in time for episode about 270. It's not too bad.
Oh, that feels like a reasonable, manageable, and achievable goal.
Yeah, as long as I'm alive by then, that's fine. And lastly, I bow down laughing to Rob's joke about Joe Yowza from the Max Reba band sounding like Bobcat Goldthwait. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Ever so filled with leftover green bean casserole from Thanksgiving, Vesuvi. She's very imaginative on a culinary level. Every week.
She's mentioned she's vegan. I think you have to be.
I think it helps have some creativity when you're... Yeah. I had some vegan lunch for lunch today.
Okay.
It was jolly nice. I've had it before, but I thought it was very nice. You know. Anyway, P.S. Last Friday night, a friend treated me to a screening of Can You Ever Forgive Me? Yeah, I suppose we can. Going to the cinema without us, how dare you? Mm-hmm. Which co-starred the illustrious Richard E. Grant, who we'll see in episode 9. The flick, based on a true tale, gets my endorsement if you should ever be in the mood for a movie featuring elements of biography, drama, comedy, and crime. And then the Wikipedia link is a link to Joe Yowza's...
I was expecting it to be Richard E. Grant, about through me.
I know, right? That would have been amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's all the... emails we have this week. It's 13 minutes in.
Maybe there was a power outage in Uganda.
Quite possibly. Still, you know, an early night's nice every now and then. So this week, the big news this week,
yes,
it seems, is Galaxy of Adventures. So you touched on it a little bit earlier with the Star Wars, the announcement of the Star Wars Kids YouTube channel.
I mentioned it in passing, yes.
Indeed. But the full story regarding the announcement that accompanied it is that there is a new series coming, a series of animated shorts that are going to kind of touch on in a Hollywoodized, even more so than previously, way, the events of the original Star Wars trilogy.
Is that confirmed? I'd seen speculation along that line.
It's confirmed. So
yeah,
it's
okay, cool.
One short per film, I think, for the first 6 movies.
Okay, cool.
With my understanding. So I'll read you the press release as I received it from Lucasfilm yesterday. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares. Adventure awaits you and the younglings in your life in Star Wars Galaxy of Adventures, a new series of animated shorts that will introduce the classic themes, pivotal moments, and iconic characters from the Star Wars saga to the next generation. I've included the trailer link in the show notes if people want to watch it, if they haven't already. Making their debut on November the 30th on the newly created Star Wars Kids website at starwarskids.com and the Star Wars Kids YouTube channel, the first 6 exciting shorts will be accompanied by fun mixed-media educational pieces designed to help older fans, parents, and other mentors welcome the kids in their lives to explore a galaxy far, far away. Additional shorts featuring fan-favorite characters will debut in December and then on a weekly basis starting in 2019. The adventure continues across a variety of product and platform categories, including a new line of Hasbro toys available on December the 1st exclusively at Walmart, and then nationwide in January 2019. Star Wars Galaxy of Adventures begins a year-long celebration which will culminate in the final chapter in the Skywalker saga, Star Wars Episode 9, in theatres December 2019. So there you have it. The announcement is, you know, that's the full extent of the announcement. So we have six animated shorts coming to YouTube
tomorrow at the time of recording.
Yes, indeed. So the first one will be tomorrow at the time of recording. It will have been out by the time this episode goes live. Obviously, we can potentially break it down next week as to... It's probably, you know, shorts says to me sub 10 minutes. So
I mean, Force of Destiny episodes are quite often under 3 minutes. So
oh, really? I thought they were sort of short. 5 to 8.
No, Force of Destiny is really short. Yeah, wow. There's a couple of compilations of like 2-3 episodes, which might be what you're thinking of. But no, most of them are under 3 minutes, I'd say.
Yeah, I don't remember where I don't know where I'm getting that from. It's just kind of, that was kind of the impression I had in my head. So I may just be, you know, speculating, and that's it.
Watch it a lot.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, you know, you do have a toddler who's mad on the stuff.
Yeah.
So that's fair. So I imagine you're probably pretty jazzed about this, right?
I am really jazzed about it. Yeah, I've sort of gone on the trailer. I'm not so keen on taking with the anime style personally, but that's because I'm not a huge anime fan in general.
Yeah.
But that's not really relevant to the quality.
You like some stuff, though, right? Anime-wise?
I like a few bits, but not enough to say I'm an anime fan in general.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, there's some anime I like, but I don't keep up with it or go out of my way to find more.
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying.
What I've saw on the trailer looks pretty cool. I mean, my daughter's nearly two. She loves A New Hope. She loves Rebels. She loves Force of Destiny. So anything more along those lines is going to be great. Yeah,
sure.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should be a good time. I mean,
very much up my street.
I'm curious about it, though, because my kind of thinking about it is, like, you've given the example of your young one, your youngling. She loves A New Hope and she loves Rebels. So she knows the story already, right?
I mean, as much as she's able to comprehend any story when she's not even two.
Yeah, but I mean, what I mean is, I don't necessarily think that an animated short is going to make that any easier.
No. One of my friends, I wish I'd asked permission to quote him beforehand. He said something along the lines of, it's a really good idea because a lot of younger kids do kind of get put off by that 70s, 80s, cinematic feel, and something which is kind of rejuvenated and enlivened and more in keeping with the stuff they do like might help to raise their interest and get them more involved.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, ultimately, I would much rather they did this than remake the trilogy, because I'd rather the original movies remain sacrosanct and don't get
untouched. I'd rather these 70s movies remain in their pristine untouched form from 1997.
Yeah, exactly. I'd rather they don't. What I mean is so much.
I do get what you mean.
The Lucas touch is the last touch to it.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
I'd rather that be the case than it not be the case. So I'm quite happy for them to do stuff like this that kind of revisits it and does it in a way that's true to the original themes, but maybe does it, you know, obviously updates it with the visuals of the time and stuff. That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, kids' novelizations of the original movies have been done and redone and rehashed like 20-odd times, surely.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I mean, they only just last couple of years just redid them as like young, and it's no different. It's just another way of communicating the story for a different medium
true.
No one went up in arms about all their remaking it when they redid the novelizations. As you say, I think this is a really good avenue for achieving the same effect.
Yeah, and what as well, something just popped into my head, but it seems to have popped back out again just as easily.
We'll watch it as well.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, of course we will. I mean, I'll certainly. I mean, especially if they're short. I mean, I don't give myself a lot of chances to watch. Yeah, I don't get a lot of opportunity to watch a lot of stuff, but at the moment. But at the same time, for shorter stuff, it gives me a better chance of getting into it. That's for sure.
That's fair. Yeah.
The likelihood of me being able to, you know, if they redid the movies or did it, serialized it over a TV show, it'd take me ages, it'd take me years.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still doing Battlestar, and that's 80 or so episodes, and I've been going for probably 6 months. because I've got in fits and starts of, you know.
Yeah, I've got the original Trinity radio dramas, and they run long.
Yeah.
It's like 10 hours to do A New Hope. And then I think it's about 2.5 to do Return of the Jedi, because they started running out of money as things
developed. Oh, fair enough. Yeah. I thought you were just going to say, like, they just started getting more and more disinterested, and just the descriptions got really, yeah, I don't know, furry stuff, whatever.
The first one was a really big deal.
Yeah.
And I think Empire Star Wars, but I think by the time Jedi came around, kind of radio dramas weren't as big as they had been in the mid-late 70s. And I think they kind of did it just to round off a trilogy rather than because they actively wanted to. I mean, even Mark Hamill did A New Hope and Empire, but he's gone by the time they did Jedi.
Yeah. I thought of what I was spacing on a minute ago. One of the reasons I thought that I think this is a good idea in kind of on reflection is I think that, and I don't mean this to single out the younger generation because I don't think this is unique to them, but I think it's reflective of the modern YouTube style generation that shorts is probably the best format to tell the stories because people have only got attention spans that last that long.
Maybe.
You know, it seems to be getting increasingly, the long form stuff is, you know, there's a certain audience, I mean, clearly in Uganda, that appreciates long form discussion and that sort of thing, and obviously sees the benefit in the medium. But at the same time, for the most part, you know, these sort of the younger kids tend to watch things like montages, clip shows. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the sort of more famous YouTube channels, like even somebody like PewDiePie, does his game stuff, which is how he got big. But at the same time, he also does things like, you know, those try not to laugh challenges, mm-hmm. where some YouTuber sort of puts himself in front of videos and then watches lots of short clips and tries not to laugh. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. So I think it fits in quite well with the modern era of how entertainment's distributed, that it's shorter, more regular, you know, weekly shows that are going to be sort of, I'm guessing, sort of 6 to 10 minutes tops. It's kind of cartoony and kid friendly and visual aesthetics. It's anime enough to kind of interest, I think, older viewers. It's Star Wars enough to interest older viewers. Mm-hmm. It's different enough to interest people who probably, you know, maybe really like the series. And, you know, you and I have talked about it before, maybe even on Talk Star Wars, about the unenviable job of a movie director who's doing an adaptation.
Mm.
And how if you make a straight remake of the video game or book or whatever, the people who really loved it won't bother because they already know the story, and the new people are going to be like, whatever. Whereas if you make it completely new, you alienate the people, you know, the people who like the original thing are going to complain that it's too different. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you can't really win. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, almost.
Yeah.
So I feel like the fact that they're doing, because I've seen from the trailers, there's little bits and pieces that are kind of different and over exaggerated, maybe for comic effect, or, you know, stylized for the sort of the kid friendly format. I think stuff like that is kind of good because it gives the sort of the older generation of fans, or older generation might be the wrong word, but the sort of the longer term fans, it still gives them something a little bit new in what they already know, something that's instantly familiar, but at the same time.
I don't know if that's even a factor. We will watch it because we will watch anything with the Star Wars logo printed on.
I'll certainly give it a go.
But they're going out of their way to launch a whole new website and a whole new channel called Star Wars Kids. I don't think they particularly care about the older fans' feelings towards this particular release.
I'm sure they, you know, I'm sure they want as many people as possible to watch it, but I think they're not going to lose any sleep if the older fans are not particularly feeling it. Because that's not, like you say, you rightly point out, it's not the objective of the exercise. The objective is to appeal to kids, to get the next generation involved.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
How do you mean?
It seems a bit weird to me that they feel they have to actively rebrand as Star Wars Kids when I see Star Wars as a kids franchise anyway.
I don't know, maybe this is designed to skew slightly younger than, because I mean, Star Wars is kind of, you know, me and George has been on record as saying it's for 12-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe. It's kind of, it's sort of that, just, you know, preteen kind of late single numbers, early double digits.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is kind of going for that sort of 5+.
Yeah.
range.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, ultimately, the more kind of, if you look at it from Lucasfilm and Disney's point of view, the more avenues, the more kind of recruitment avenues they have to get people into stuff, the happier they're going to be, because the more they've got more time to build that kind of that loyalty and that what's the word, brand kind of, you know, attachment, which so many of us clearly feel.
Yeah,
I've seen people, it's like sports teams sometimes, you know, Wars versus Trek or whatever. It
yeah,
it gets a level of fervor.
Yeah, the Wars versus Trek thing, I think, has always just been kind of, well, my experience of it has always been quite tongue in cheek. Anyway, it's been that kind of fanboys level of engagement, really.
I hope so.
I think there's more fans of both, and there are people who spit on one or the other.
Yeah, I think it's probably fair to say. I mean, I say I hope that's the case. I mean, I've never really done much looking into it, but it seems to me like that makes some sense.
Yeah,
and I say I certainly hope it's the case.
Or like the Marvel DC rivalry, inverted commas, might be a better allegory for it, I suppose. There's no real competition, to be honest, especially considering half a writing team work for both.
Well, quite, yeah. I mean, on the, you know, obviously there's people who sort of play their teams on the movie front when it comes to...
Yeah, more so.
I love this, I love this, and this one must suck as a result. It's like, there is no diktat from entertainment world or reality in general, to be honest, that says that in order for one company that makes products to win, the other one has to lose. That's not how that works. Entertainment's not a zero sum.
In entertainment, it's a rising tide that floats all boats.
Yeah, it's not a zero sum game. It's you know, it's very much a, there's opportunities for everybody to make something, to get something out of it. So yeah, Galaxy of Adventures, 30th November, the start. So the first episode will be out by the time this podcast goes out.
Yep.
One thing that did catch my eye, aside from the new line of Hasbro toys,
yes,
which obviously will excite toy collectors, the thing that gets me jazzed about Star Wars is the possibility for new t-shirts.
Okay.
I do like me a Star Wars t-shirt. In fact, yeah, I am wearing one right now. I'm wearing my Rogue One Darth Vader.
Yeah.
VADAR on the packaging. Not so much.
Yeah.
Official merchandise, not bootleg or anything. Genuinely, just got through quality control somehow. But the thing that caught my eye apart from that was the last sentence of this press release reads, Star Wars Galaxy Adventures begins a year-long celebration.
Ooh.
So it gets me thinking there might be stuff.
More?
Yeah.
Well, just, I mean, I'll be honest, it's just, Star Wars is just constant for me, so I don't tend to notice when they do these sorts of things.
No, but there's no, what the reason I say there might be stuff coming that we haven't heard yet is because it's not like there's a milestone attached to this.
No.
2019, the only 2019 milestone is 20 years since Phantom Menace. Now, there may be something around that. It's entirely plausible.
Yeah.
But it seems like the kind of thing that, you know, I mean, they did the 3D thing already. That didn't really work out back in the day.
I think they did Phantom Menace and then the rest of them they were supposed to do. But I think it was a combination of the buyout happened at that time.
I know, it's well
and also
that.
The bottom fell out the 3D market again.
But yeah, I mean the buyout was years after that, I think, because I remember
going
to see Phantom Menace in 2009, I want to say.
Oh really?
Yeah, yeah, it's a while back. No, 2010, 2011, maybe.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, I thought it was more recent than that.
No, it was a while ago.
Oh okay, I thought my initial impression was it was supposed they were supposed to do one a year.
Yeah.
The Attack of the Clones was going to be the following year.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
I was
under
the impression
too.
That was when the buyout happened and they kind of shelved it along with a lot of other stuff like, you know, Clone Wars and Star Wars Detours and a couple of books and comics got shelved.
Yeah. I mean, there may have been plans to do it, you know, to do it again nearer that time, potentially.
Yeah. I think it was more to do with 3D movies for that of vogue again.
Yeah, I mean, they do seem to have gone out of vogue again on a more permanent basis recently.
It happens. Every time 3D comes along, there's always a furor of, oh, yeah, they've fixed it and it's going to be here for good this time. It never is.
Yeah, it's a shame because there are some movies, I think, that are improved by the addition of 3D tech.
Yes, yeah, some for sure, but I think it's... the first time 3D came along was in the 1950s and it had a big resurgence with home video in the 80s and then they tried again about... As we say, 5-10 years ago, they had another run at it with Avatar and...
Dread.
Dread. There's a couple. All the CG stuff, the kids' CG movies tend to get 3D released because they're incredibly easy to convert to 3D.
Yeah.
Because literally all you do is you drop a virtual camera about 6 inches to the right of the other one. They haven't held a foothold.
No,
I think it's still the raw materials required are too expensive.
I imagine, like, for the cinemas, it must suck, because I know, you know, certainly the one I was at when 3D was starting to become a big thing again was had a really expensive special screen that was designed to make 3D better, because it needed a special...
Is that silver nitrate stuff?
Silver nitrate stuff, yeah. On the back of the on the line, it needed to be lined with it to make it reflect properly.
Yeah.
And a special and a special projector as well.
Actually, like, of all the 3D waves they've been, I thought this most recent one was the best, because it was almost like they added depth. Whenever you watch an old 3D movie now, there's always actors and characters poking stuff at the camera for no particular reason.
Yes.
Just to kind of, it's like, you can tell when a film was 3D and has been D3D'd for home release, because there's just lots of shots of just pointing.
Yeah.
Or waving stuff at the camera for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
And this most one match they did, I think, were by taking some films and making
like
them.
The Meg.
Yeah. There was a couple of things they did. Firstly, they made the depth go the other way. It was often like the film went back.
Yeah.
And they just sent for depth rather than waving stuff at the camera all the time.
Yeah.
I think doing post-production on some stuff stopped that. I mean, I saw the remake of Clash of the Titans in 3D.
Oh, man.
And because it hadn't been filmed in 3D, there was no temptation on their part whatsoever to do any waving stuff towards the camera.
Yeah.
It was just kind of dropped in after the event, which had some downsides as well.
Sure.
Because it sometimes looked a bit paper theatre almost, with cardboard standouts, with where the depth didn't really blend.
Yeah.
But no, generally, I think it was certainly been better than the 50s and 80s waves of 3D.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I've seen some films at the cinema that have been good in 3D. So there were movies I enjoyed at the cinema in 3D. Like, I did go to see Phantom Menace 3D.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking, much like you described a minute ago, the depth of field was one of the things that I really liked about the 3D treatment they did on that film.
Yeah.
And obviously things like the lightsaber battle, especially, they just look amazing. You know, when you're talking about 3D, three-way lightsaber battles with obviously everybody, they're all in different positions on the screen in terms of their position in the sort of, you know, on the Z-axis. They're in different places, so the 3D actually picks that up and depicts that. What else? I saw Dread. That was fantastic in 3D. You've seen that movie, right? The Carl Urban one?
Yes.
Yeah, so you know all the slow-mo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was really good in 3D.
I can imagine, actually.
Obviously, you had all the sort of, you know, they made a point of always having stuff in the background to kind of illustrate that things were going on, and that looked really good in 3D. And all the smoke and stuff did a really good job of making use of the tech.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing Pirates of the Caribbean 4, but they did have the problem of they had stuff where, you know, a sword would go in through the door just right next to Johnny Depp's head and it would come out towards the screen.
Yeah.
And it's obviously designed, like you say, to sort of make people go, whoa, which I don't really react to.
No.
It's pretty much that and jump scares are my two kind of least favorite movie-making techniques.
Yeah. Okay.
Aside from that really stupid iris effect that gets overused in Prisoner of Azkaban, that one where the sort of camera, like, it's not how a human eye blinks. Like, it's not how, when somebody loses consciousness, their eyes don't shut like a camera.
Yeah,
nobody puts the lens cap on Harry Potter's face, I assume.
Mm.
Maybe wizards are different. Who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah.
If there's any Harry Potter fans listening,
I don't see any reason why not.
Read another book.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, certainly we have every reason to believe you can. So,
yeah.
Prove us right, please. But yeah, that's, you know, the Galaxy of Adventures thing seems pretty promising. It's fair to say.
Yes, no, I'm very positive about it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good time. And I think everybody's going to generally be good with it who gives it a chance.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, I think it should be a good time. So, this is a bit of a short episode this week because it's been quiet and on both fronts. Usually we have listeners to kind of, you know, prop us up. But in this week, it's been a little bit busy. I suppose, you know, Christmas is on its way. Everybody's kind of, you know, winding up for, they're sort of beginning to kind of get their prep done for Christmas, which does give me a good idea for a future episode, but I'll share that with you after recording rather than jinx it now.
Okay. But
yeah, you had a thought about something cool we could do, like a cool
only because
exercise.
We knew the show was going to be running short.
That's fine. Whatever our reasons, that's
pull something out of my Sarlacc. Yeah,
yeah, that's all good. So, why don't you talk us through it?
In the 1990s, LucasArts pioneered the point-and-click adventure genre with such classics as The Secret of Monkey Island, Day of the Tentacle, Sam and Max Hit the Road, and later on stuff like Full Throttle and The Dig. So my question was, what would be a great idea for a Star Wars point-and-click adventure game?
Okay, so it's a shame, instantly, that the Thrawn era post-Jedi is no longer canon. Because I feel like something in that era where you play a Niles Ferrier type character.
Okay.
But you know, maybe on the sort of the good side of the of the argument.
Yeah.
But somebody in that kind of realm would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Would have been an amazing era to play in. I mean, I'm kind of picturing nowadays, obviously not so much anymore, because for obvious reasons, but for me, the kind of the modern equivalent of the point and click is the Telltale Choose Your Own Adventure branching storyline paths.
Very much so.
And
yes.
I'm really, really disappointed that there won't be a Star Wars one from Telltale, because I really feel like that could have been a ripe,
that would have been amazing.
Yeah. You know, there's such a big universe to explore, and there's so many time periods they could have played in. There's so many characters they could explore that either, you know, ones that you've seen before, not for long, or completely new ones.
I'm more annoyed by the cliffhanger of Batman Season 2 ends on, but fine.
I haven't played it yet, so I can't. Okay. I can't really comment on that. But
it is an ending, but at the same time, it's very much open for a third part, which isn't going to happen.
Yeah, no, this is true. So that is a shame. Yeah, but yeah, it's there is a sense to me that there is going to be a loss felt by that, because I wonder if Star Wars might have been on the, I imagine if I was running the game studio, and there's lots of systems in place to stop that from happening, but if I was, I would have a list on my, you know, I'd have a kind of dream list of stuff I could work on, and whether that's scope of project or license property or, you know, whatever, there would be a list of dream things, and doing something Star Wars, you know, official Star Wars would be on that list, you know, number one with a bullet.
Yeah.
So it's a shame, because I really feel like Telltale, from all the kind of, all the games I've played of theirs, which is a good chunk of them, and all of the bits and pieces I've kind of gleaned from playing the games and their attention to detail on the source material and stuff like that, it makes me think that not only would they have given it a fair bit of, you know, respect and love, they're probably fans.
Yeah, no, totally. And the fact they'd been given Guardians of the Galaxy already, almost as sort of a tester from Disney, I think.
Yeah, I mean, entirely possible, yeah. Maybe they're sort of, you know, see how well you get seeing how well you get on with a space setting and a, you know, a beloved property like Guardians, which is, you know, if you could have told me even 8 years ago that Guardians of the Galaxy would be one of the most beloved Marvel franchises in the history of creation.
No, right?
I've never heard of them.
I was
before
at a Disney
film.
Store today. There was a Gwen, Spider Gwen action figure.
Yeah.
I've been into Asda, not a Forbidden Planet, not a geeky comic store, not a proper toy store, Asda, and it's had a Nova figure or one of the rare Inhumans as an action figure. It's an amazing world we live in.
It's a bizarre world. I couldn't agree more. But yeah, it's
funny you should say about you'd love to work on Star Wars, because someone asked me if you could work, because people may not know, I am a writer, that is my job.
You mentioned it once or twice.
Every episode is someone's first episode.
Yeah, exactly.
And I write mostly like historical horror with sometimes military horror. I started doing more military stuff.
There's a military kind of theme in a couple of them. Or the military setting rather than a theme.
I'd love to write for Terminator. I think that would be ideal for me, and because it's kind of action, a little bit scary, lots of guns going off.
Yeah.
And I really like the first two movies, and I think I know what went wrong.
Okay, fair enough. I would. It's funny enough, way back when I had, you know, kind of dreams of my own of writing stories down, before, usually what ended up happening was I had a really nice idea for a beginning and maybe an end, and that would be about it. Yep. All the bits in the middle, not so much. Yeah. But I would. I had a robot story, where like a sort of, you know, post-apocalyptic robot story, which I was writing, but I didn't get very far with it, unfortunately, which is a shame because I really feel like it was it was a nice idea, the kind of the vague premise I had in my head, I felt, but such is life, you know.
I think I've
still got the drafts and bits and pieces I put together, but obviously they're not very well fleshed out, and I've sort of lost the thread. I didn't have a great thread then, and even more so now. Because obviously time has passed and, you know, stress is a thing. But, you know, it's one of those things I would have, you know, I can certainly see the appeal of working on a property like Terminator for sure. But Star Wars would, I'd say Star Wars would most certainly be my number one kind of most preferred property to work within. Actually, I mean, there may be others, you know, there may be others that I kind of, if I would think about it, I might find something that sort of pips it just for the sake of, say, obviously Star Wars comes with some storyline restrictions. You can only write about certain, you probably can only write about certain things. You can probably only do certain things with certain characters and so on. Obviously you have a timeline to work with where you obviously you can't kill off a character just before they turn up in the film later on. You know, you can't have a twist ending where Cassian Andor dies before Rogue One. It can't really, it doesn't really work.
It's you know, it's a collaborative storytelling.
That would be a twist for twist's sake, very much. You know, especially as it would make no logical sense. Now, I realize that that hasn't necessarily stopped fiction writers in the past, but at the same time, I would personally find it a bit of a challenge to kind
you
of
want
work
to fit
past
into
that.
A framework.
I would prefer to sort of, you know, stick to quote unquote reality in that respect.
I had an idea for a go. I pictured it as kind of like a 90s point and click one, but it has more of an open-ended, more a sort of Beat Cop meets Papers, Please type, in terms of just open and trying to keep the story trucking along.
Oh, I see. Not so much the actual gameplay.
Not the gameplay, though. It'd be that kind of open-ended, loose story where you're playing the game, but with like the 90s scum interface.
Okay.
And I'll just call it Lando Calrissian Cloud City Administrator.
Oh, wow. Okay. I think I see where this is going.
It's trying to run Cloud City, trying to do some wheeling and dealing without attracting too much attention from the Empire.
Okay. So, like, if you do certain things to, you know, inopportune moments or something, you kind of gain their attention. A bit like, what's the name of the game that you play as a kid where you sort of, it's like statues where you walk in behind somebody and they turn around and you have to go still. What's the name of that game? It's on the tip of my brain.
What's the time, Mr. Wolf?
That's the one. Yeah. A game like that. So, you know, it sort of sounds like something like that where maybe there's times where it's going to be harder to do stuff without attracting their attention in certain areas and stuff like that. There used to be, an old PC game, which you can still get on Steam. Other download services are available, and I think that some of them do have it, called Evil Genius, which was basically Bond Villain Simulator.
Bond Villain Simulator. It was so funny.
It was so much fun, and that had a thing where if you were doing a lot of missions in a particular area, they would start to take notice.
The CIA would take notice,
And they would eventually send like their James Bond equivalent or their sort of super agent over to you, and you might be able to capture them and sort of interrogate them, or you might be able to warp their minds, all that stuff.
It was like a really high camp dungeon keeper.
Yeah, very much so. But I thought it was fantastic. I loved that
brilliant.
Game.
It was a great fun game.
The one game that topped it for me, which I really wish you could still get more easily than you currently can. Obviously, there are ways and means, but I'm not going to endorse them and certainly not going to mention them on the air, is the movies.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that game.
It was so much fun. Yeah,
I think I have a copy in the cupboard, but I'm not convinced it's going to work on Windows 10. And it's not a Mac copy, so it won't work on my Mac. But it's a real shame because that game was so much fun.
It was really, really in depth.
And
yeah,
I don't think
really
that,
good.
I really don't think that any game they've done a couple, in fact, recently of sort of spiritual successors to Theme Hospital.
Yes, and a few people jumped on that bandwagon.
There's one called Two Point Hospital, which I've played, which is very clearly a spiritual successor in so much as all the rooms are called the same thing and the interface is almost identical.
Okay.
But it's, you know, I'm not going to knock it. It's a good fun game and I dig it. But, you know, there's never been anything that's topped the movies for that kind of creator, that kind of style of creation game.
Very good.
Oh, I loved it. And I had dreams in my mind way back when of doing an Emotionally 14 animated series inside that interface, because it was surprisingly versatile as well, considering that it was quite light on, you know, selection of stuff. You know, you didn't have a lot of things you could, you know, you didn't have a lot of different types of scene. There was only, like, you know, there was a Western set, there was a sci-fi set, there was that sort of thing. But there was, you know, despite that, it was very much something you could get a lot of mileage out of in terms of making stuff unique. But you know, for me, that kind of raw fun has never been topped. But to steer us back towards the original question, so about the sort of point and click adventure game, I like the idea of a kind of a Lando story in the same vein as kind of an Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
And the Fate of Atlantis.
Fate of Atlantis, that was another one, I missed that.
On the subject of Star Wars games I don't want to see remade, which one was a point and click? Do you ever play Yoda Stories?
I did not. I don't know that one.
Oh, my God. It was woeful.
On a scale of one to Masters of Terrace Kazi,
I played a ton of it when I was a kid. And, you know, there was it basically what it was called, what it was a LucasArts game. And it was, you know, proper official license stuff. But it was what was called a desktop adventure. And the idea was it was quick. Levels were about 5-10 minutes tops. And the idea was every level would be you went to see Yoda on Dagobah, he would give you a task, you would go to place, do task, come back.
Okay.
And it had a button. This is the kind of game, the style of the game was they had a button that was basically quick, the boss is coming button. So you could, you know, if you were playing it and somebody came along that you didn't want to see, you were playing games on at work when you should be playing, when you should be doing work.
They threw up a spreadsheet or something.
Yeah, it would just basically minimize it and stick it behind another window.
Yeah.
Which is a clever idea. But
I used to see it quite common. I suppose now it's harder to install games on a work PC without someone noticing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky that my work is pretty cool with it. And obviously, I don't tend to outstay the goodwill by, I tend to, you know, restrict myself to my lunch break. And even then, I'm only playing sort of, you know, strategy stuff generally. You know, I play stuff that I can't get on consoles as good an experience. You know, things like strategy games tend to be like, you know, strategy games, tycoon games tend to be more fun on a PC in my experience.
I agree.
Not to say they can't be fun at all. Football Manager's on the Switch and it's perfectly enjoyable, but Football Manager's also on the PC. Ton of fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is also, I've got my eye on it at the moment. Civilization's just come out on the Switch.
Oh,
Civilization
nice.
6. I've got my eye on that very, very hard.
I've played that for years. It was a long time ago I last played Civ.
Yeah, last one I played was Civ 4 Colonization, which was the remake of the original Colonization, which was like an 80s Sid Meier game. Sid Meier's Colonization was Civ 4 engine, Colonization mechanics, which was pretty cool. But yeah, the point-and-click adventure game, I like the idea of a Lando game. He's a character we didn't really get much of in the original trilogy. There's a ton of time, and even now there's a ton of time there's a time period you could very easily fill with cool stuff. You know, there's the sort of post-losing the Falcon but pre-Bespin era, because at no point has he mentioned in, you know, at the end of Solo, there's no sense of where he goes next. So there's no reason why you couldn't have him turn up somewhere else and, you know, do some kind of caper. Plus, if there was a way you could switch between him and Lobot in a point-and-click game, I reckon that would go down really well.
Oh, yeah. Everyone loves a bit of Lobot.
Yeah. I know the guys at Blast Points did a whole episode about him. It was about an hour and a half. I was beyond impressed that there was that much to talk about for an hour and a half. It was incredible.
Okay.
Yeah. I definitely recommend it if you haven't heard it. It's an old one.
He was awesome in the Lando Marvel series.
Yes, he is very good in that.
He's really good in that.
Yeah, it's very true. But in terms of, so would you want like an episodic game, do you think?
No, in my mind's eye, I can kind of see it as at least one of the 90s scum.
Yeah,
games.
Like a one and done. Maybe there's a series.
Yeah, Steel Sky. Yeah, that kind of deal. That was a good one, actually.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I think that's a good, you know, that seems like a good approach, is to have a one and done. They say you can do more than one story, but it's good. They're self-contained adventures.
Yeah, I kind of feel a large part of Telltale's problem was that you can't do the episodic thing anymore.
Which is a shame, because I actually quite liked, especially because obviously, you know, I've talked to you about it before. Much like Blake, I keep a list of stuff I've completed.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, Telltale games are really good for padding those out. Because ultimately, I'm playing one storyline, but I'm playing it in five parts. And each game, technically, I could, you know, there's no reason why I couldn't stop at the end of episode one and not play anymore.
That's still a complete game. Exactly. Yeah, I just feel that that business model kind of was enough to get them off the ground, but they should have moved to complete games after that, because people were waiting to buy the complete, but to buy the disc of a complete season anyway. I always waited until the season was complete before buying it. And I think they'd have been better. They could have done lower budget games. They could have been £25 for a season, but they should have just cut the season thing out and done them as one game. I think that did them no favours in the long run.
Yeah, I think the episodic format works in so much as it's nice at building tension. You can break it up into nice chunks. But I think the big release dates, but the big gaps between releases is probably what did it. Because I think ultimately nowadays, you know, we touched on it earlier with about attention spans and stuff. I think people have moved on to a different game by the time the next one comes out.
Yeah.
And
it's a problem.
It's harder to jump. I've always found it's harder to jump back into a game if I haven't played it for ages. And even though I've finished the story of one, it doesn't necessarily mean I remember what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is a shame that Telltale has kind of is no more, because I really feel like there was probably a really strong Battlestar game in them as well.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how cool that would be as a whole undercurrent across the whole, you know, a Telltale game series where you don't know if you yourself might be a Cylon.
Or an alien game.
Yeah, something like that would work as well. You know, there's loads of stuff you could do.
We'll end up just listing franchises we like if we're not careful. But
this is true. This is true.
You get what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, ultimately, I say it's Star Wars would be a good franchise for the episodic format, I think, as well, because in the same way, you could actually have short, self-contained beginning, middle, and end stories that still form a part of an overarching narrative. Which, you know, say, it is a shame. But it's one of those things.
Yeah. But in terms moving away from a point and click thing, is there any particular Star Wars games you'd love to see or wish had existed?
I would have liked.
When you were a kid, maybe.
Yeah, I can tell you one thing that I definitely would have liked to see. So they did.
Not Yoda stories.
No, not Yoda stories. We've talked about this game before.
Did we actually talk about Yoda stories, or did we get sidetracked by the boss screen?
There's a little bit of. I talked a little bit about it. It's like a desktop event thing. It's a top down, sort of 2D. You just moved around, and I'm talking the rudimentariest, sure. Most rudimentary of rudimentary controls. You needed five buttons, the arrow keys, and one button to swing your lightsaber and interact with stuff. Maybe you needed six. I think the lightsaber and the interactor are on different things. Innovative, I know. But it seemed, so this is one I really would have liked. You know the Sins of a Solar Empire games, the big strategy 4X?
Oh, yeah.
Star Wars one.
Yeah, okay.
I feel like Star Wars and, you know, video games and Star Wars have the right kind of Venn diagram overlap that that Star Wars fans would get really into a game of that scope.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know, Star Wars more personal driven. It's like, as you see in the board game Star Wars Rebellion, it looks big, but actually it's all character driven.
Yeah. But it's, I feel like there would be certainly like a Clone Wars one, like a set in the Clone Wars era. They never did much with that. They had Galactic Battlegrounds, which was basically Age of Empires 2 with a Star Wars sheen.
I liked Galactic Battlegrounds.
It's a good game.
Yeah.
It's a fun game.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a facelift job.
Yeah, it was very much
all,
so.
All the best Star Wars games were never groundbreaking. They were games already quite good, but then they superimposed a Star Wars license over it, because Force Unleashed was just God of War.
Yeah.
And as you say, Galactic Battlegrounds was just... Age of Empires 2. Age of Empires 2, yeah, none of the truly great Star Wars games were breaking new ground.
No. I mean, the only one I can think of that had any kind of novelty to its mechanics would be something like KOTOR, I guess.
KOTOR, yeah, I guess so, yeah.
But, I mean, even they'd done, I think Jade Empire was before KOTOR.
That sounds familiar, yeah.
And that was the same developer because it was BioWare as well. Mm. And I think but Jade Empire might have been a kind of... a precursor to a point, although not by that much. It's tricky, really. Actually, now having said that, maybe KOTOR predates it. I don't know. 2005 for Jade Empire. I know that.
Okay, yeah. No, I was playing KOTOR when I was uni, so it would have been 2002, 2003, maybe.
Okay. Oh, yeah, 2003, yeah. So I played it in 2005, but I didn't realise that wasn't the first sort of wave of KOTOR. I played it in French, actually, because that was the cheap... I could get a really cheap copy in a French electronic shop, and it would work on my PC. And obviously, I had enough French knowledge to be able to understand roughly what I was doing.
Yeah.
And... even though it might have had English options, but I think I enjoyed the challenge. And it's certainly much easier to play something like that than it is to play Football Manager in French. You imagine how in-depth that particular spreadsheet gets.
Yeah.
But yeah, that I would have liked to see, because they did Rebellion, which was like a sort of, a galactic strategy map with, resources on each planet, and you could put troops down and build garrisons and all that stuff. But it was pretty light. It was not particularly deep.
Where was Empire at War? Was that after Rebellion? I think it was.
It was, yeah, because Rebellion, I think, was, I want to say 98, 97, something like that, whereas Empire at War, I think, was early 2000s.
I feel like Empire at War kind of blew my mind, because I think it was the first time, apart from maybe TIE Fighter, you'd actively played as the Empire was the only option. There wasn't a Rebel mode to play as.
No, that's true. There was, do you remember Force Commander? Speaking of games that kind of sucked.
Oh, the name's really familiar, but I can't place it.
It was a PC one released in 2000, and it was just the ropiest looking game. In many ways, even then, it didn't look fantastic.
I'm looking for some Google images to try and jog my memory.
Yeah.
Because the title's really familiar, so I feel I have played it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Yeah, this is familiar looking. So I think I must have played it. It looked like it was animated on a passing 3DO.
That's what passing, yeah. Like a Doppler effect, like an animation Doppler effect.
Yeah.
But, I would have liked to see something Sins of a Solar Empire level of scope.
Yeah.
Clone Wars era of timeline.
Okay.
Because that would have been really cool. And I think it would have been a nice way to... I think you're right. I think you touched on it earlier that maybe Star Wars works better with a character-focused story, but Clone Wars doesn't necessarily need that. Because you can just have a large galaxy with lots of different troops. And I mean, obviously, Clone Wars, by the clues in the name, they're not exactly... you've got your little squadrons of individual characters. I think actually nowadays, you could probably do something really cool with that, because you could have... A big galaxy-wide war, and when clones have built up enough experience from performing missions and killing enemies and stuff like that, they could gain names, which would give them sort of personality traits and stuff, like they do with the Middle Earth games, where every enemy captain has a set of strengths and weaknesses and a gimmick.
I was wondering if in some way Shadow of War could be reframed for Star Wars, but I couldn't hit on anything.
I think it probably could work. The problem ultimately is that it's all swordplay in Shadow of War, and obviously the equivalent is lightsabers, but then lightsabers and stealth, not so much.
Yeah, they are the worst thing to sneak up on someone in the dark with.
Yeah, you just kind of... The idea of it is quite entertaining, though. Just like, I'm just going to sneak up on this person and...
Yeah.
And then, obviously, anybody who's looking in that vague direction sees this massive column of blue light from a corner of the room. So I think it might be a Jedi over there.
I'd like to see a game along the lines of Hidden Agenda where one of you plays as Krennic and one of you plays as Tarkin trying to take control of the Death Star.
That would be kind of cool, actually. Yeah, that would be very cool.
I mean, Ben Mendelsohn would be up for it, I'll have a word.
I think so. I think, you know, ultimately he seems like the kind of dude who's up for cool stuff, you know.
Yeah.
He seems like that kind of guy.
Guy Henry's affordable.
Exactly. You know, he's totally within the realm of possibility, I think.
If we can't get him, we can get Peter Stormare. It's not a big deal.
This is true. You know, although obviously the scenery budget goes up when that happens.
And Peter Stormare would want to play the Death Star.
This is true. Yeah. He wants it. I figured it out. Guys, there's a way for me to eat the most scenery possible. What if I eat an entire planet? They have to do the entire
Death Star. We really do.
The entire Death Star animation for destroying a planet is completely reformed to just see that just a pair of big jaws come out and just swallow it whole.
Do you see, there's a crazy trend Facebook group, and I pitched the idea of Harry Potter movies completely remade with him playing every single spell in them.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Do you see the one? Somebody put this on Twitter the other day.
I just like the idea of Peter Stormare running up behind Harry Potter, smashing the glass at London Zoo and shoving him into a snake cage.
I saw one. Somebody sent through recasting Peter Stormare and the Muppets in Real Steel.
Okay.
And then Peter Stormare plays one of the robots. Everyone else is a puppet, including all of the other robots. It's amazing.
Even better if he's just one of the background robots.
Yeah, exactly. Just one on the, just one on the shelf.
See, you watching it going, is that Peter Stormare?
Oh, but yeah, the other one he said was Jaws, because that is the, again, you can, you know, you're going to need some bigger scenery.
Yeah. Oh, Jaws with Peter Stormare as the mayor would be amazing.
That would be good.
Like, and everyone else is a Muppet. Yeah.
Everyone else is a Muppet. Or everyone else is a shark, except for the shark, which is a Muppet.
Which is animal, yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly. Works. And everybody else is in water and animals on land. I don't know where I'm going with this.
We're back to Bizarre Obi-Wan again.
Basically, yeah. It seems to be a place I spend a fair bit of time.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of video games, the big one for me would be a strategy game, because I really feel like they didn't necessarily take advantage of the full range of strategy game options.
Very combat-based without more of a diplomacy and exploration aspect.
Yeah, and they could do one that would be...
Sim Trade Federation, maybe.
Maybe not to that degree of... maybe somewhere in between the two lies the balance.
Perfectly regal.
Yeah. But they always, you know, they never quite nailed simultaneously in-depth and strategic with not crap. Like, there was always that balance to be struck, and they never quite got there for me. Because even something like Rebellion, which I spent a lot of time with, it's not by any stretch of the imagination an amazing game. I just happen to enjoy it because I'm a bit weird, ultimately. And that happens, you know. It's been known, especially in my case.
A root beer tapper cloned, but set in Dex's Diner.
Or just, I'll tell you what, a root beer tapper clone where every now and then Sam Wessel walks in disguised and then two Jedi chop it to bits. So you're trying your best to focus on the tapper and then stuff like, just something on like 1313. Maybe this was the game. Maybe this was 1313. So you're actually the bartender in one of the 1313 bars.
Ooh.
And everything's going horribly wrong around you, but you've got to focus on the root beer dispensing. I feel like
Dex is almost like bringing in like illicit booze, like a smuggler.
Yeah.
So you've got to get in like late night shipments of Jawa juice in.
There you go.
And the great thing about, if you did that, the best thing about that is you could call it Dex's Midnight Runners.
Oh, amazing. I feel like if the guy from who did Papers, Please were to make a Star Wars game, that would be exactly what he'd make. Exactly, to the letter. That would be his brief.
Yeah.
It's just, I want to explore the dynamics of the bartender in episode 2.
Yeah.
A person who's probably not actually on the screen at any point. And yet...
Amazing.
Gets, you know, he would want to do a game designed around that character. That's my sense. I don't know if that's true or not. I may just be, you know, it may be excessive speculation, but I feel like that's how I see it.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's all the only way I can see it is the way I see it, ultimately.
Yeah.
That's not true. I sometimes can do it any other way when I have some sort of breakdown. So there you go.
A Turin Way VR game where you put the headset on and it's just black.
Is this thing on? Oh, yeah, no, it's working. Yeah, yeah. Every now and then you just hear Jane Wen just heckle you just from off screen.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, you sad case. You're gone that temple again.
Actually, some sort of an evil genius clone set in Saul Guerrera's base.
Okay. That's actually a good shout. That is a good shout. I like that.
I know. I do those occasionally.
Yeah.
I mean, often.
Kanto Bite Casino Manager.
Yeah. Oh. See, any of these kind of theme games will be.
I think it would work. I think it would work really well, actually. Mm. But then again, there are steps in place to stop me from being able to make my own games.
Unfortunately, seeing yet, well, all these brilliant ideas, what did we get? Super Star Wars and Masters of Terrorzkazi.
Super Star Wars is good. You shut your whore mouth.
It is. It's just nails.
It is hard. This is true. I only ever finished Return of the Jedi.
That's no, I have a new hope on PS4 because it came through the original Battlefront.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. I never got it myself. But,
it's nails.
Yeah, it is hard. It's not an easy game. I think I had a cheat cartridge to get me through.
Like a Game Genie also.
Yeah, but it wasn't one that gave you, I don't think it advanced you through the levels. I think it just gave you like temporary invulnerability and things like that.
99 lives or something.
Yeah, that sort of thing. So, you know, just the ability to get further with, you know, make your sort of not much skill go further.
Yeah.
But Jedi, I remember finishing, but that was hard.
Yeah. Especially because you're obsessed with Jedi at the time.
There is that. The last level of Jedi, I think, is you getting out of the Millennium, the Death Star with the Millennium Falcon, and you've got about as much room as they had.
Yeah.
But obviously,
of course, the game, Return of a Jedi game. That was awesome.
Of course, the game makes you move around because otherwise it wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't be fair, would it?
Mm.
But there you go. So if you're listening and you're thinking to yourself, oh man, I have a really great idea for a Star Wars game.
Yeah.
We want to hear them. You know, we want to hear ideas of all sorts of stuff like that. That would be awesome.
Send them in.
Yeah, by all means, please do. So you can send them to talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com or you can tweet us at talkstarwars. You can DM us there. Our DMs are open. Obviously, we reserve the right to mute anybody particularly aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, we've not had to do that with Talk Star Wars. I've had to do that elsewhere, but that's my Twitter account to concern myself with and nothing else. Mm-hmm. But also, we have a Facebook page, Talk Star Wars, and you can feel free to message us there too. We have a Facebook Messenger attached to it and all that, as they are one to do. But there you go. We're on obviously all good podcasting platforms and some of the rubbish ones. So you can find us on pretty much everything except YouTube. And if you can't find us on something, let me know because I might not know it's a thing. And maybe I can figure out a way to make it work. Brad, if people want to find you on social media, where might they do so?
You can find me at Facebook on facebook.com/Brad Harmer Barnes. Don't be afraid of adding me. I generally accept all requests, including obvious Russian bots who I then proceed to troll through Facebook Messenger for as long as I can. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at RealBradHB. I do have a Discord account, but I don't have a clue how it works, so you're better off just throwing bricks at me, and I hope you're getting my attention if you want to use Discord. And you can buy my books through Amazon, please do.
Yeah, indeed. And you can find links to those in the show notes, which are available on the Star Wars Commonwealth website.
And a staff profile at E14.
Yes, you can. And you can also find them if you're a member of our Patreon, because the patrons get, in exchange for their support, an ad-free version of the show, which drops on a Saturday instead of a Monday, UK time.
Yes.
And also there's a copy of the show notes attached. There's a lovely PDF. Which is the same PDF that me and Brad worked from when we were actually doing the episode. So, you know, not the same one. It's digital. So obviously we all have our own copy, but
we can't do signed copies.
It's the same. Yeah. It's not, it's a lot harder, mainly because of shipping, which, you know, mainly because they can't even fathom how you would do that. But, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Wade Vision. And obviously if you want to interact with me in any other context, the easiest ways are the Talk Star Wars and Emotionally 14 Facebook, Twitter and Facebook pages as well. We don't really mention the 14 as much as we should, considering that it's now the kind of the home of Talk Star Wars on a Monday morning. Don't really, maybe maybe we should mention it more. So there you go. This is me doing that now. So Emotionally 14 is now the home of Talk Star Wars on a Monday morning. So if you're a Monday morning kind of podcast person, I know a few people who are. a lot of our lovely listeners are. They wait, you know, eagerly for Monday morning to get their hands on the latest episodes. When, you know, at the same time, they could be just getting it as early as Saturday and getting it without ads in the beginning and end. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's up to you. But Emotionally 14 is the home of Talk Star Wars on a Monday morning. Emotionally14.com is the place to find the episodes, as well as some fantastic YouTube stuff, other podcasts that we all get involved in. There's a ton of fun stuff there. You know, what can I say?
Yeah.
We put out a ton of cool stuff for your entertainment. And obviously, the more people listening to it, the less futile it all feels. So there you go. I'd be remiss, obviously, as always, if I didn't thank Adam Sheldon for the use of the Talk Star Wars intro and outro music, which is fantastic. And obviously, we love to have it and very grateful for it. And similarly remiss would I be if I did not mention the wonderful folks at the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. So we have in among our midst, in addition to Talk Star Wars, we have Tumbling Saber.
Tumbling Saber.
The Generation X-Wing podcast.
Jet X-Wing.
The Rogue Squadron podcast.
Ask You.
What's that? Are you doing social media?
No, just didn't ask you. I was trying to give them like hip-hop street names. My
oh,
fingers.
Okay. Yeah. The Skyhoppers podcast.
Skyhopo.
The Nerd Room.
Nerd Room.
All right. These are getting more and more...
Some of these are hard.
They're getting more and more unintelligible as we go along.
Yeah.
The San Diego Sabres radio podcast. Best of luck.
Oh, what was that?
San Diego Sabres radio podcast. And then I said, best of luck.
SDS in the hizzle.
All right, nice. Tatooine Sons.
Oh, man, that's even harder for some reason.
Dave and the Boys.
Twin Sun Side.
There you go. Less than 12 parsecs.
Fewer.
Again, it's just what's written in front of me. Take it out with Tim if you're really that bothered. Because, you know, you will lose.
I'm aware.
Yeah. And the last but not least, the wonderful chaps at the Retro Ink podcast, including TSW favourite Jeremy.
Yay!
Yeah. So there you go. So you can find all of those podcasts, as well as the occasional written piece and access to all the show links, at StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first steps into a larger and brighter world. Thank you very much, as always, for listening to Talk Star Wars this week. We will see you again next week for episode 147. And until then, may the Force be with you.